Hi, I'm Patricia Carvelis. I'm the host of the ABC's podcast Politics Now, where I'm joined by the sharpest political journalists at the ABC to bring you the big stories you need to know.
You'll hear analysis of the week that was in politics with me, Fran Kelly, joining PK for the party room.
And on Insiders on Background, join me, David Spears, as I zoom in on one big story and a key voice behind it, diving deeper into the policies, laws and people shaping our landscape.
All in the Politics Now feed. Search Politics Now on ABC Listen and hit follow so you never miss an episode.
From Wondery Country, I'm Lixitum Dunton, and today on The Breakfast Wrap, it is Budget Day. So, before the Federal Treasurer hands down what he's calling his most ambitious and responsible federal budget, you'll hear from the Finance Minister, Katie Gallagher, and her shadow across the aisle. You'll hear Claire Chandler find out that, under the cover of a budget lockdown, the government is releasing a long-awaited response to the gambling inquiry.
The federal government is set to table its formal response to the Peter Murphy review on a curbing gambling reform. What do you think of that timing?
I actually wasn't aware of that until you just mentioned it now. Look, that is interesting timing from the government.
You'll also hear from anti-gambling advocate Reverend Tim Costello. We'll also turn overseas because storm clouds are rolling in for the British Prime Minister.
It was looking incredibly dark and gloomy outside number 10. Approximately 70 to 71 calling for Keir Starmer to, as you say, set out a timetable for his departure.
From the Radio National Breakfast team, this is The Breakfast Wrap. It's nice to have you with us for a really big day in federal politics. We've got a lot to work through with a couple major interviews. But before we get to that, how much do you know about how the federal budget is handed down? And what do you know about budget lockup? Journalists, politicians, staffers, they're all herded up and locked up in Parliament or offices around the country. They're guarded by Treasury officials and then handed the budget papers. They've got hours to pore over them, but they can't report anything to the public until the Treasurer gets on his feet at 7:30 p.m. Eastern Time to present the budget. Now, we wanted to peel back the curtain and find out just how today works. One of the people getting locked up is our very own business and economics correspondent, Carrington Clark, and he told me earlier just what today had in store. Hey, Carrington, thanks so much for doing this.
My absolute pleasure.
So, what is the budget lockup?
There is this feeling of excitement, I must say, in Parliament House among my Canberra colleagues. This is kind of their Christmas, I guess. The budget lockup allows all of the journalists to get in other stakeholders, I should point out, industry groups, unions, etc., and to get their hands on the documents before it's released to the public so that when the embargo lifts, that we can give an informed view of what the budget looks like to the audience. So it's about 6 hours. That you're deprived of communication with the outside world. There is an emergency phone if something happens outside that people can reach you. But, you know, this is proper lockdown because there is market-sensitive information that you could potentially use to make yourself some money if you were acting outside the moral guidelines.
I've never heard someone so excited to be locked up for 6 hours.
I love being deprived from communication occasionally. It's lovely.
When you get handed those budget papers, what's the first thing you're going to look for in this budget?
I think this budget is very much focused on the changes to housing taxation in particular. That's how the government is framing it. We've seen these leaks or drops, as we say, within the business about of stuff basically telling us ahead of time what's actually going to be in there. And the changes to negative gearing and capital gains, the capital gains tax discount, will be monumental. This is a debate that's been happening for as long as I've been in journalism about whether or not they are the appropriate settings and whether or not they are creating intergenerational equity, which is one of the terms that we keep hearing from the government, i.e. making it harder for younger people to compete against older people who have more cash and are able to deploy that cash and those assets to buy even more properties. So that's a big shift. I'll be looking for the detail. I think one of the things that's going to be interesting is whether or not these changes are also across the board for other asset types. And we've already seen some business leaders, investment managers come out strongly about against the suggestion that there will be changes, particularly the capital gains tax discount, when it comes to investing in other companies or in startups, that will make it more difficult for Australian businesses to get off the ground and will make it less attractive to invest. So even though the focus is on housing, I'll be particularly interested to see if it is going to be more broadly on other assets and to see also, of course, what the government is doing in terms of demand. This is the big debate at the moment around whether or not the government is doing enough to rein in its own demand pressures to allow the Reserve Bank to do its job more effectively to try to bring down inflation. So those are the kind of things I'll be looking for, at least at first blush. And then obviously trying to find out if there's stuff that hasn't been forewarned in this document, if there are any surprises in there. It does appear that we've got a lot of information ahead, but there is always a space for surprises.
Big day. How are you going to get through it? Have you got any snacks in your drawer, Carrington?
I need to go and hit the supermarket because I'm not at home to stock up, make sure there's a lot of easily digestible sugar available.
Snakes, jelly beans, one in each drawer.
Thank you. That's good advice. And I will be speaking to a person I know you know well, Patricia Carvelis. We're going to be doing a special co-production of our two podcasts, Politics Now and ABC Business Daily. Patricia Carvelis will be explaining the politics behind these big decisions, and I will hopefully be giving some insight on the economic consequences.
Excellent plug. And then all of that analysis live on Radio National Breakfast tomorrow morning. Carrington, thank you.
Always a pleasure. Thanks, mate.
Carrington Clark there. So, as he mentioned, the budget is expected to feature changes to the capital gains tax discount and also to negative gearing in a bid to get younger Australians into the housing market. We heard from 17-year-old Erica from the New South Wales Central Coast. She told us that she'll be watching the handing down of the budget with great interest.
I want to see reforms on housing because I know our tax system currently makes it really rewarding to own a lot of properties, like as an investment. And I believe, well, I know that that's from negative gearing and capital gains. For me, having an affordable housing option or help from the government, well, that's what I want to see. And I think the budget should aim to protect young people that do not have the same opportunity as other wealthier generations who own a lot of the houses.
And that is 17-year-old Erica there from the New South Wales Central Coast. So this morning, Sally Sara interviewed Katie Gallagher, the Minister for Finance, the Public Service, Government Services, and also the Minister for Women.
What does the government know now about the extent of intergenerational inequality that you didn't know at the last election?
Well, Sally, as you know, our focus in housing has been on supply. When we came to government, we'd seen a decade prior of no Commonwealth investment in housing, and that had built up a lot of pressure. So our first response was to look at re-enter the housing policy area for a start, invest in supply, look at different models and ways to do that, including through the Housing Australia Future Fund, and then, you know, keep looking at what needs to happen to shift the dial and make the system fairer, particularly for younger generations. And, you know, our governments have to deal with these entrenched challenges when you're working through all of these issues. And we've done that, and that'll be reflected in this budget.
So is this because the supply policies haven't worked?
Not at all. I think it's in addition to that, looking at all options available to the Commonwealth government and to assist with supply. So it's, you know, it's all of our housing programs and then looking, you know, and I don't want to preempt what the Treasurer will announce tonight. It's a bit difficult being on your show on budget morning. But then looking at all of the other impact, you know, issues that impact on affordability and accessibility and having to deal with those, and you'll see that reflected in the budget.
What's your message to older Australians who may be worried or unhappy about these potential changes and worried that they may lose out? What's your message to them?
For a start, I think there's a lot of older Australians, and I'd include myself in that category, who worry about their children and their grandchildren and the deal that they, or the hardship they face in housing in particular. So I think there is a lot of understanding across the community about governments needing to respond to try and make housing more affordable. But this, you know, and again, I don't want to preempt some of the detail that the Treasurer will outline later, but you know, this budget tries to do a lot of things, and one of it is about fairness. You know, it's about resilience, it's about reform, it's about relief, it's about getting the budget in better shape, and, you know, we'll have lower debt, lower deficits, and a stronger budget position as well. And we've managed to do all of that in a pretty volatile, uncertain environment where we've had new issues coming at us. But, you know, I hope Australians look at the budget in its entirety and sort of see how all of that sits together.
So for older Australians who have taken advantage of some of the economic policies that have tilted in their way, is it time for them to give up some of the advantage that they've had so it's fairer for younger Australians? Is that what inequality, addressing inequality, is about?
Well, look, I don't, this isn't about generation versus generation. This is, you know, and the budget also has quite a focus.
It's about righting things.
Well, it's, there's a, you know, it's about making sure that, you know, there is fairness across the board, and no one's begrudging people's ability to buy houses, have investments. You know, this budget actually has a heavy focus on older Australians as well, with investments in aged care and the like, because those pressures are there and we need to ensure we're looking up after older Australians. So that's part of the budget as well. But it is about fairness across the board, and it's not about pitting one generation against the other. You know, people make these decisions based on the arrangements at the time, and that's fine, and that, you know, should be acknowledged. But we also have to look at what's coming next, and increasingly younger people are being locked out and feel extremely frustrated with the position they're in around, you know, their ability to become an owner of a house, which, you know, many of us grew up in this country believing was the Australian dream.
And that is Katie Gallagher, the Minister for Finance, the Public Service, Government Services and Minister for Women. Well, on the other side of the aisle is Claire Chandler, the Shadow Minister for Finance, for Public Service and the Shadow Minister for Government Services. She joined Sally and Sally asked her about the government's expected changes to the capital gains tax discount and negative gearing in the budget, which would break an election promise. Sally asked if the Coalition would support the changes if they'd see more young Australians into their own home.
We're going to have to wait and see exactly what is in the budget tonight. Where there have been an awful lot of thought bubbles that have been floated by the Treasurer in the lead up to this budget, particularly in relation to CGT changes and negative gearing changes, and I wouldn't want to preempt what that might look like. But my starting point for all of these sort of housing-related tax issues is that you don't make more of something by increasing taxes on it. Taxes are inherently a disincentive to create more of something. And so we're going to be looking at the detail in the budget very carefully tonight to see whether whatever is proposed, whether it's CGT or negative gearing, is going to have a detrimental impact on the supply of housing. Because at the end of the day, the way we're going to fix the housing crisis in this country is by building more houses.
If these policies need to stay, explain who does negative gearing and the capital gains tax discount benefit, and why do those tax breaks need to stay?
Well, I think at the end of the day, it's up to the government to explain how and why any changes that they might be proposing are going to improve the housing market. There have certainly been a number of very smart economists out there in the last couple of weeks talking about their concerns that this has the potential to increase rents, may not actually have the impact on the housing market in terms of owners, property purchases that would be desired. So like I say, if we need more houses in this country, let's build more houses. Let's not start taxing them.
Do you think that younger Australians care more about a broken election promise or the promise of a better shot at owning their own home?
It's a really interesting question, because I actually think what young Australians are starting to turn their mind to is the huge amount of government debt that's currently sitting on the books. And I said a couple of weeks ago that young Australians aren't going to be able to afford to buy their first home regardless if they're getting taxed through the eyeballs at some point in the future to pay down the almost $1 trillion of government debt that the Albanese government is sitting on. So I think there are a lot of concerns in the minds of young Australians. Certainly access to housing is one of them. But I also think there's this real awareness now that government needs to be spending within its means. And I certainly hope that the Treasurer has some sort of grand plan tonight in the budget to explain to Australians how the government's going to start paying off its debt, because over the last 4 years, we haven't seen the fiscal discipline from the Albanese government that demonstrates they're capable of doing that.
How many surpluses did the Coalition deliver in its last stretch of government?
Well, look, in our last stretch of government, we had a once-in-a-lifetime pandemic that we had to deal with. And like I say, you know, we were getting the budget back into balance before the pandemic hit.
But you didn't achieve surplus.
We were getting the budget back into balance when the pandemic hit. And look, moving forward, I mean, we have to be future-focused with this. And I would like to hope that at some point in the future, a coalition-led government is in a position to get this budget back into the balance. I'd like to see Labor give it a crack as well. But as I say, everything that we've seen in the last 4 years demonstrates that this government doesn't have the discipline to do it.
Just finally, today on Budget Day, when most of the senior journalists in the press gallery will be in a budget lock-up, the federal government is set to table its formal response to the Peter Murphy review on a curbing gambling reform. What do you think of that timing?
I actually wasn't aware of that until you just mentioned it now. Look, I will be in the lock-up as well. That is interesting timing from the government. I mean, we'll look and see the relevant shadow minister, I'm sure, will look and see very closely what is in that review. But that is intriguing timing from the government, given, like you say, that most of the press gallery is going to be with me, locked up looking through the details of the budget. I wonder if there's anything that government is trying to hide there.
Shadow Finance Minister Claire Chandler there. Well, on that decision to release its response to the Murphy report, here's how our political correspondent, Stephanie Boris, explained the government's decision.
Big thing with politics is timing. You know that more than anyone, Sally. And this report, it was handed down in 2023. So it was handed down a while ago. The government's had a long time to think about it. And, I mean, I have to say that this is purely a way for the government to bury it, right? No one's going to be looking or focusing on this. They've had plenty of time to hand it down. The only reason that they would be doing it today is to try and make sure there's not as much focus on it.
A budget day burial. Stephanie Boris there. Now, briefly, I want to share another voice on this. We also heard from the Reverend Tim Costello. He's the chief advocate for the Alliance for Gambling Reform. And here's what he told Sally about the government's decision.
Well, I think the Prime Minister would say that he promised to table it the first day of the next Parliament sitting, which I think is today. But look, it was announced the day before Good Friday when the main speech at the press club was about the Middle East-Iran war. We've had over 1,000 days of silence. We do have a very timid package. And for it not to be, when it's tabled today, examined by journalists, when I think this is one of the most profound intergenerational issues that Australia is facing. Why? Because some 600,000 12 to 17-year-olds gambled last year, though it's illegal. That's 30% of our teenagers gambled. In fact, more gambled on sport than playing soccer and basketball combined. This is a profound intergenerational issue because gambling ads has utterly captured and groomed our kids for the profits of multi-billion foreign sports betting companies. So I'm disappointed. Journalists will not be seeing this package when it's tabled today.
Anthony Albanese flagged a cache of reforms in April. It left many of the recommendations of the Murphy Review unanswered. Do you anticipate the tabled response will include further action, or have we heard all of the government's response so far?
I would love it to have taken on the advice and the will of the public. I don't suspect it will have.
And that is the Reverend Tim Costello, the Chief Advocate for the Alliance for Gambling Reform. And with that, we'll park federal politics for now. I've always thought the breakfast wrap could do with a bit of a weather report. So here today in Melbourne, we've woken up to a bit of fog. But if you look overseas, storm clouds are rolling in for the British Prime Minister.
It was looking incredibly dark and gloomy outside Number 10, and I think that's capturing the mood inside the Labour Parliamentary Party too. I mean, approximately 70 to 71 MPs, including ministerial aides, calling for Keir Starmer to, as you say, set out a timetable for his departure or to simply quit.
And that is The Guardian UK's political correspondent, Alita Ardu, there. You can find her interview on Breakfast on ABC Listen. But as this pressure piles on the British Prime Minister, we decided to speak with his biographer Tom Baldwin. He's also a British journalist. He's a former Labour Party senior advisor. And here is his forecast for the Starmer Prime Ministership.
He's in very deep trouble. All day there's been this steady drip of one more backbencher, another backbencher calling for him to go. The total's now reached about 71. It's about less than a fifth of the parliamentary Labour Party, but it's just this sort of constant feed of people coming through. There's now some junior government parliamentary private secretaries calling for him to go. And most significantly, it's being reported that a cabinet minister, the Home Secretary, Shabana Mahmood, is going to call for him to go. So it does feel there's a momentum growing, but it's quite weird in that, you know, it's less than 2 years since Keir Starmer was elected with his vast majority, more than 170-seat majority. That has meant to bring a period of stability and calm. And now it looks like there's a very strong chance that we'll be on our seventh prime minister since the Brexit vote 10 years ago. Mm. And we're beginning to look like an unserious country.
But what's your read on that? I mean, for Keir Starmer in recent weeks and months, it's been the Sir Peter Mandelson scandal has accelerated some of the disapproval, also the local election results. But it seems like the dissatisfaction with the major parties, that is increasing exponentially.
Yeah, there's Labour's sort of losing votes in five different ways to five different parties. There's no one reason. There's, you know, it's losing votes to the Greens, it's losing votes to nationalists in Scotland and Wales, it's losing votes to the insurgent populist right, to the Reform Party. We're in a sort of incredibly unstable period of politics. You know, this sort of chaos, which has been going on for 10 years or more in our politics, seems to be just sort of developing its own momentum and sort of churning out more and more failing governments, unstable governments. If you stand back from it, it's quite weird to see why this government should be unstable. It's got this big majority. It's 3 years to go before a general election. And yet you've got a sense of panic among Labour MPs, partly because there's so many of them, often with very small majorities. They're losing votes on both flanks. They don't know where to go. And Keir Starmer is unpopular in the country.
Tom, with your political and journalistic experience and writing this biography about Keir Starmer, what do you make of his instincts? Is he likely to keep swinging? He's going to fight against this push against him, or will it reach a certain point and he will step aside?
He's a very proud, very stubborn man. He's not particularly expressive, but he's got quite deep emotions. He will not want to go like this. He won't want to go being defined by failure or a decision over Peter Mandelson's ambassadorship, which he probably, if he trusted his own instincts, he wouldn't have made. He'll want to hang on. He's said today that he's going to prove the doubters wrong. It's quite hard to drag a prime minister out of Downing Street if he doesn't want to go. You know, the different mechanisms are, you know, you need 81 Labour MPs to trigger a contest. Even then, Keir Starmer could take part in the contest and he could appeal to the party membership, among whom he's still actually relatively popular. So it's not necessarily a case that if the MPs get a leadership election, they'll get him out. Or it may be that this will happen very quickly, that tomorrow morning, you know, just in about 12 hours' time, there'll be a cabinet meeting. And if a critical mass of cabinet ministers say to him he should go, maybe he'll say, that's it, I can't hang on. It looks at the moment like the majority of the cabinet are staying with him. I don't think it's, you know, the media sort of got sort of centre blood in their nostrils and they think they've got him. I think he'll do everything he can to cling on.
So will that be enough? That is the big question. Tom Baldwin there, Sir Keir Starmer's biographer. We will be keeping across that story in depth. The other story we're going to keep across is just what happens with the federal budget. Tomorrow morning at 6 a.m. on Radio National and also ABC Listen, you'll get all the latest analysis on just what the Treasurer announces at 7:30 tonight. Make sure you're tuning in. And later on in the morning, you can catch up with The Breakfast Wrap. Today's was produced by Grace Stranger and Katie McAllister, and I'm Lixidum Dundon. We'll see you tomorrow.